Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming. I know it's a very long day for most of you, but I really appreciate coming to this workshop. Like Arturo mentioned, there are no hard rules we can discuss. If there are any questions, I'm more than open to answer them. I want to just introduce myself a little bit, and then we can talk about the type of research we're doing at Purdue University. A little bit about myself. I used to work for Monsanto Company for 10 years, nearly 10 years in St. Louis area, and then about a year and a half ago, I started as a faculty at Purdue University. This concept of precision agriculture, remote sensing, imaging, and looking at how plants are performing and what type of nutrients are needed for plants, or inputs needed for plants, is being done by industry for some time now, and I wanted to show you some pictures there. But today's focus is mainly going to be in the controlled environment ag sector. So we're going to talk about how we can use this technology in greenhouses, in indoor farms, things like that. These concepts can certainly be expanded to field also. However, that requires a little bit more research. However, the things that I'm going to show will mainly focus on controlled environment agriculture today. Controlled environment agriculture, by definition, it integrates both science and engineering-based approach to grow plants, and the main purpose is to increase the productivity. And if you look at the controlled environment ag industry, there is a really wide range of growth facilities, starting from high tunnels at the lowest end, and these high tunnels expand season, 1 month, a couple of months on both ends. And then you have temperature-controlled greenhouses, or poly houses, and also nowadays we're having greenhouses with artificial supplemental lighting. That's the next level of sort of like high-tech growth facilities. And then that the highest level are these vertical or indoor farms, where pretty much everything is artificial. You control temperature, you control water, you control lighting, and everything is done in artificial conditions. So this industry includes all these growing systems. And the technologies I'm going to share today will be useful across all these three groups of facilities, growth facilities. So why monitoring inputs is very important? So this picture, I pulled this from a research greenhouse in Canada, but I wanted to highlight that when I say inputs, I'm talking about natural gas for heating the greenhouses, electricity for lighting up greenhouses, and then the fertilizers and water. So those are the four main inputs that kind of constitute almost 30 to 35% of the total operational costs. The partition in this picture may be very specific to Canadian greenhouse here, but if you take this information and extrapolate it to some of our greenhouses in the Midwest, Northern United States, you probably will be spending pretty much similar on heating, but slightly more on electrical energy for lighting, almost 10 to 12%, and then fertilizers and water are a relatively smaller component. So that's one thing. It's about 30 to 35% of the total cost, so it's a significant component. And so it's quite important to monitor these inputs, manage them, maintain them at appropriate level, at a level that is optimum for productivity and sustainability in this industry. This picture is about the evolution of sensing technologies. In my opinion, we several years back, almost two, three decades back, the main way of looking at moisture usually is visual observation. So we used to have this field approach, and even now in field we do this field approach, and we collect soil, we make balls to figure out is it moist enough or not for irrigation. We look at plants, are they wilting, and then start watering. So that's the at the lowest level, visual observations. And then, about nearly 15 years back, when I was actually a graduate student, we started using soil moisture sensors, the moisture sensors that have there are more electronic moisture sensors that can be connected to data loggers, things like capacitance probes, time domain reflectometry. So that's a big jump, and we were able to automate these sensors. We were able to collect continuous data. But the real problem with these sensors, so you can only have one sensor in a limited area. If you are growing plants in containers, maybe one sensor per pot, and they are about $70 to $100, the cheapest ones, and so it could be quite expensive. I think that in my opinion, the most recent are the 3G of sensing is remote sensing. By definition, remote sensing, and it is a very wide term. One thing that is common is you will not be touching the plant to make any measurements or the container. So these measurements are made from some certain distance from the plant, and that could be as close as 6 to 7 inches, all the way up to taking measurements from satellites. So it's a very broad range. The power you get from these measurements is, they are non-destructive, but then if you place them at appropriate height from the plants, you can actually collect what we call crop signature. Something is coming back, reflected being from the plant, so it's called crop signature. And we can collect this crop signature from groups of plants, sometimes several plants. And so that's by definition remote sensing, and people have been using this at various levels. While I was working for Monsanto Company, and this big data precision ag just started about 5 years back, and it's very popular now in many industries. Conventional agriculture, outside agriculture, is actually utilizing this technology. In this picture, I'm just showing you a cartoon of how this remote sensing actually works under field conditions. So the electromagnetic radiation that we're getting from sunlight hits the plants, and a portion of that gets reflected back. And that is actually collected by our satellites up there. So they collect the signature, and then they retransmit back to some terrestrial locations where the data is captured, processed, and after data is processed, the data is directly sent to these field maps. Nowadays, if you are familiar with these, the equipment that farmers use, the combines, they actually have iPads, and this data can be directly sent to these equipment where farmers can see how the nutrients are being distributed in their field, which hybrid is most suitable for particular location, and they can do planting based on that information. And also during the crop growth, you can collect the signature and send that information to farmers so they can manage their nitrogen or nutrition management, and if there are any pests and diseases, they can see at a much larger scale. So it is actually a practical technology. Actually, companies like Monsanto sell this on an acre basis to farmers as a package when they buy seeds. So this is already there. However, there are some issues with this technology. I mean, keep in mind the data has to go back all the way up to the space, and then it is retransmitted back, so there is a possibility that you lose some data, and then you don't collect all of the data. And then the other bigger issue with this remote sensing all the way from space is, I have this, my pet example always I give to audience. Let's say you have grown a corn plant, and then you have harvested corn plants, and by chance, if weeds start growing and they fill the field with green color, the space, imaging from space will tell you that there is a lot of canopy growing there and there's a lot of healthy vegetation out there. So although there are weeds, if you take a signature, crop signature all the way from space, it's not going to distinguish between a crop plant and a weed species. So there are some issues there. And I think personally this technology is really powerful for controlled environment agriculture. You can really manipulate this and utilize this in controlled environment agriculture. And there's also another important reason why this is really required in controlled environment agriculture. And there are a couple of pictures here. This is a greenhouse-based hydroponic system, and this is on the right side. You have this huge vertical farm. Look at these plants and imagine how easy or difficult it is to really monitor how much nitrogen is there in these plants. Are these plants getting enough amount of water? Are they growing properly? If you just put a sensor here and there and few parts, that is a very random number pretty much. You're not collecting useful data. look at these vertical farms. They all the way go up 20 to 40 feet. How do you know that plants at that height are growing properly? I mean, you got to climb every day, use a ladder, go up, and look at your plants. This is very challenging. But by using some simple cameras, very cheap cameras, and that's something I'll share later on, you can put a camera on this boom system, and this boom goes from one end to the other end of the greenhouse. It takes pictures of the plants at different locations, and then you can process the data, and you can get a very good estimate of how plants are growing, how much nitrogen is needed, and how much water is needed for the plants. You can do the same thing even in vertical farms. We can place cameras, $150, $200 cameras. So these are not really expensive. These are really affordable ones. The expensive part is the software that we are developing. Once that software becomes public and free to download, you just need a camera and you connect it and download the software and start looking at how these plants are growing right in front of the computer. So that's the big scope here. That's what we are imagining, and we're trying to get there in the next couple of years at Purdue. So what we are developing at Purdue are techniques to monitor plant growth rate, how much weight these plants are adding on a daily basis. When I say plant growth rate, I'm really talking about groups of plants. It can be a meter square area. It can be, if you want to measure just a smaller area, that's fine too, but we're actually trying to measure large groups of plants. We're also looking at nitrogen status, how much nitrogen is the plant. For example, the conventional way of looking at nitrogen is collect leaf samples, send them to laboratory. It takes about $20 per sample, and then they send back the results maybe a week later. In some situations, it's already late. So here we are trying to develop some technologies that a grower can use and look at the nitrogen status instantaneously in his greenhouse on a day-to-day basis and adjust fertilizer requirements of plants. And also, we just started looking at water status, and I'm going to share some of the examples later on during the talk. So there are a couple of models, conceptual models that we want to develop. We have a model that we are developing for a large-scale grower, and also we have a model that we are developing for a really small-scale grower. Large-scale grower has a potential to afford for some resources, so we're thinking of setting up some camera systems like this on a boom, and they take images. He can run this boom irrigation whenever he wants. You can place four or five cameras on a boom, and they go from one end of the greenhouse to the other end. They take pictures as needed, maybe every day, and all of the data goes back to the computer where the processing happens and decisions are made. And from that, automatically, we want to turn on heating, cooling, or turn on the supplemental lighting, or also turn on the injectors and give the plants the right amount of fertilizer. If the algorithm shows that plants are having less nitrogen, we are developing systems where a high EC recipe can be supplied to plants. And otherwise, if the plants are really having high amount of nitrogen, we are developing protocols to algorithms that will tell the automation to supply a low EC fertilizer. So that type of complete automation is definitely possible with this technology. On the other hand, really affordable model for really small scale, mom and pop type greenhouses, 3,000 square foot greenhouse. They really don't have a lot of resources. So what we're developing is apps based on smartphones. So every smartphone has a camera. We're actually trying to work with some companies. Like in this case, if you look at this camera, this is about $245. And this camera actually gets attached to any smartphone. And you can use this camera to collect just a regular visual image that you can use to process and look at how the plants are growing. It also has a thermal camera. And using the thermal camera, you can actually figure out the canopy temperature, and from that you can extrapolate that to plant water status. So there are already off-the-shelf products that are available, but we are trying to develop even cheaper ones that are $50 or $45, and that can be attached to these smartphones. Everyone has a smartphone, and so all they need to do is the growers can take the pictures as and when they need. Of course, there is going to be some error associated with these measurements because a grower is taking at his facility. It's not like a research facility. But again, ask this question. They are not interested in statistical significance. They are not interested in p-values. What they are really looking for is, should I water today? Should I add my fertilizer tomorrow? That's the question they are trying to do. And I think this technology really fits that. Well, there are a couple things, and thanks for reminding me. If you take this camera, if you look at just, I'll give an example of iPhone. After iPhone 5 came, the company actually started putting some filters. They added filters for infrared light. So if you allow infrared light to hit the sensor, the picture quality goes down. And so there are these cameras. iPhone 4, I think, does not have a filter, but from iPhone 5 onwards, you already have a filter. And later on, I'm going to show you, because we have to, in the algorithm will likely use that infrared reflectance from the plant to process the images. So now if they have a filter there, that signal is not coming and hitting the sensor. So in order to get rid of that, you have to open the iPhone and take the filter off, and that is not a practical recommendation. And so instead of using the camera on the iPhone, we're actually using another simpler camera that takes a good quality picture. Nowadays, you can, for $35, you can get a real good 10 megapixel camera. And so that's the reason. Yeah, please feel to ask questions or stop me. I think we have some reasonable amount of time. We're not in a rush like other presentations. And so... so we can go at a slow pace, and I can answer any questions you may have. So our approach is to do some real good research with the high quality equipment in the lab, but then take that knowledge and develop solutions that are really affordable. So what we do is we use two approaches to pick up crop signatures. So there is a sort of like a spectral reflectance sensors will just give you some information. You can just point these sensors towards the canopy, and they reflect, and then you capture that reflectance, and you can process that. I'm going to show you how you can process that. Bear with me, but that's the simplest way. There are spectral reflectance sensors that are about anywhere between $500 to $750 to $1,000. You can have a nice sensor, and then you can pick up whatever wavelength you want. On top of that, what we are more interested in is in these image stations. Because I've shown you our approach is to use cameras, either expensive ones or smartphone-based cameras. So we want to really develop image-based processing and then apply that image processing onto affordable cameras. So we have an image station. We call it like Top View. This is supplied by a Dutch group. Aris is the name of the company. And this is technically called a multispectral image station. You probably have heard something like hyperspectral image station. Hyperspectral means you can get images at every wavelength, and then you got to process all of those images. The multispectral, you don't get images from every wavelength. We pick up some wave bands that we are interested in. For example, if you could look at these numbers, these are the wave band, 465 nanometers, blues, and then the greens and the oranges, and then the reds all the way up to near infrareds. So you can pick up any band, and there are filters in this particular system that will allow the light that is coming back. But then what we do is, one thing I want to mention is the cameras that we normally use, these are called RGB cameras, right? They collect red, green, and blue light, and then in the post-processing phase, they put the three images together to create a color image. That's a regular RGB visual camera that we use, any cameras that we have. What we have in this system is called a monochromatic camera. In a monochromatic camera, you don't have any filters. It just takes whatever light hits the sensor and makes an image of it. And so what we do is we place the plants here, and then we hit the plants with a particular wavelength. So there are LEDs inside the system that will fire one LED at a time. And then when you hit the plant with a certain amount of light, there's going to be some reflectance, and that reflectance is captured by the sensor, and you get an image for that particular wavelength. So by using one LED at a time, we are collecting the reflectance signature from the plants, The sensor picks up the signal and you get an image. So these images are not color images. These images are called grayscale images. They look like black and white, but in reality they are grayscale images. In this particular picture, right now you're seeing a wavelength pretty close to the red, and that's. But then what we do is it's completely automated. You place a plant, close the door, and you turn on the computer. One wavelength after another wavelength hits the plant, and then you collect signature automatically, and then you start collecting images. So here are some examples. For example, I've shown you a lot of wavelengths, 495, 521, 529, 620. So I'm going to just, this is the regular RGB image. This is what you normally see when you take a picture. So these are petunia plants. You just place these petunia plants, so it's a top-down view. And then the system collected the red, green, and blue, put them together, and then made the color image. And then I'll talk about this RGBA in a bit, but bear with me. But then look at these things. This is important. This is how the plants look when you just expose them to red light and capture their grayscale image. And then here is a green one, and then there is another image from near infrared. And so if you look at these images, one thing is very clear. Some images are quite darker, like the red one, while some images are, if you look at the plants look really closer to white in color. And so why is that happening? If plant absorbs all of that light, or most of that light, then the images look darker, because very little is being reflected back. But if most of that light is reflected back, like in near infrared, plants don't use near infrared, they reflect most of it, so you start seeing images are more white in color. The green is in between red and near infrared. Plants do absorb green light, but then reflect most of it. And so these are grayscale images. And now we have now an approach to actually quantify how much of the light at each wavelength these plants are absorbing, or how much of the light these plants are reflecting, by simply looking at the color or the brightness of that image. In a regular camera, you got something called a grayscale. It's all the way from 0 to 256. That's a standard grayscale. Every camera has that. 0 is black, and 256 is white, and anything in between are different shades of gray. So you can actually use that approach and use these images and figure out exactly how much light is being either absorbed or reflected at each wavelength. Now compare this with a spectral reflectance sensor. A spectral reflectance sensor, you place it on the top, you pick up a signature, and it gives you some numbers. You do not know where those numbers are coming from. It can be from the background, it can be from the plant. You try to adjust it such a way that it's mainly coming from the plant reflectance, but it is possible that it is coming from the background. And you do not know how much of the plant is covered. Here you have actually a picture. And I'll talk about how you get rid of the background in a minute, but you can get rid of the background and you can get the signature completely from the plant. We know that if plants are reflecting more of the red light, they're actually supposed to be absorbing all of it in photosynthesis. If they're reflecting, there is something wrong with the whole process. There may be a chlorophyll deficiency issue or nitrogen deficiency right there. And so that's an example of how you can process these images and look at how much nitrogen is there. A little bit about this RGBA, that A stands for alpha. It's an alpha channel, and that's what we use to get rid of the background. If you look at these two pictures, this is same, but in this picture, the background is not there, just the plant is being shown. So we make sure that we get rid of the background and then process these images, and we look at the reflectance. And I'll tell you in a minute how we do that, how do we create that alpha channel. Similar concepts, again, here is lettuce plants. They're exposed to red light and near infrared light. If they absorb most of the light, it looks like look darker, and they reflect most of the light in near infrared, so they look really white in color. So the numbers for grayscale values for NIR are closer to 256, whereas the numbers for the red are probably closer to zero because they're absorbing light, getting darker in color. So more absorption, lower grayscale value, darker the image. And here are, the software actually processes this and gives you nice histograms. So here is the grayscale value for red and a grayscale value for near infrared. If you look at the scale, 0 to 256. And you can see a nice shift for red towards zero, whereas for the near infrared, there is a shift towards 256. So the mean values are probably close to, I would say, 75 or 80 here, whereas the mean value here is probably close to 45. So the lower value, more absorption, the darker the image. So I talked about alpha channel. That alpha channel is used to get rid of the background. It's very important because you don't want to pick up any signature from the background. The background could be soil, bench space, anything. So that creates a lot of error. So we have to absolutely get rid of the background. And so the way we do is, if you go back to this, I should have mentioned here, there is an additional channel. In addition to these wavelengths, we also use a 695 nanometer bandwidth channel. What 695 nanometers is, it's fluorescent signal. So when you expose plants to blue light or red light, most of that is used in photochemistry, and a significant component of that is lost in a non-photochemical quenching, or re-radiated back as heat, but there is a small, tiny reflectance signature that's basically light being re-radiated from the plant at a specific wavelength range between 685 and 695 nanometers. So that's called fluorescence, and there is a lot of information knowledge based around that. So what we do is towards the end of our image collection process, we expose plants a little longer with blue light and pick up that, and then we apply that 685, 695 nanometer filter and just capture reflectance in that range. And because it's reflectance, it's more is being reflected back, it looks relatively white in color. The reason why we want to do that is only living things fluoresce, like plants, and in this case, the plastic and the background, non-living things, they don't fluoresce. So now we have a way to make a contrast between the background and the plants. In this picture, you can clearly see only the fluorescence is coming from plants, whereas the background appears just black in color. We use this fluorescence signature as the alpha channel and make a mask out of it. And the software does that. Basically, what happens is that it takes this fluorescence signature, creates all of the fluorescence area into this white color, and then everything else is treated as black, and then only uses the pixels within that white color for processing a plant. And then what happens is then we take this mask and apply onto the same thing. The end result is this is what we get. So this is all automatic. It happens quite fast. Now the problem is we have this image station. We have nice way to obtain the fluorescence signature. What about if you want to do this on smartphones? I've showed you a picture where we want to eventually take this concept to smartphones. There is no way you can get this fluorescence signature from smartphones. But what we are doing is that we can get a similar contrast between the plant and the background when we pick up that near-infrared signature, which is this one. If you look at this picture, there is a lot of reflectance, and you can see the background is clearly distinguished from the plants. And so that is why that NIR light is very of most interest to me. And unfortunately, Apple and other smartphones, they have a filter for that. So we have to go for a sort of like a different camera. And that kind of answers, again, your question. And so once we have these pixels, once we have the background done, now we have just lifted the plant, and automatically we can count the pixel area. Every camera has a sensor, and on the sensor you have these photodiodes. Each photodiode is basically a sensor and has got a certain millimeter square area. So once you know that information, it's fairly easy to do some mathematical computation and get the pixel area of what you're interested in. And that pixel area is directly related to leaf area or canopy area. And so if you look at this picture, this correlation here, there are two graphs. On the x-axis, you have pixel area that is coming from the image. So the image will automatically get processed. The background is taken out. The plant is picked up, segmented out, and we calculate the pixel area and gives you a number. And on the y-axis, you have the actual area, total leaf area that we measured using a Leica 31 and leaf area meter. So there is a nice correlation between image-derived leaf area versus actual leaf area that we conventionally use using a leaf area meters. There is actually also a nice relation between pixel area and dry weight of the plants. So now, I'm taking this image-derived measurement, some sort of a grayscale value or some sort of like a pixel area, and I'm actually able to predict the dry weight of the plants or what is the size of the plants. If I do this on an everyday, if I know what is the dry weight of my plants on a daily basis, because it just takes a couple of minutes to take a picture and process it and you get a dry weight, and you do it on a daily basis, you're actually looking at how plants are growing. You're measuring crop growth rate. So it's a very powerful tool. Without even touching the plants, non-invasively, without any instruments, you're just taking some pictures and you're measuring how plants are growing. And I think that's so important. We really need to know how our plants are growing in any facility. Whether it's a research or a production, that would be the number one thing. And if the plants are not growing the way you expect, then you can deep dig and figure out what's going on. There's something wrong with the plants, so let's figure out. Is it nitrogen? Is it water? Is it temperature? So they're all possible, but at the highest level, the topmost level, you really need to know how your plants are growing. And so the imaging actually offers that opportunity for us. I mentioned before that we wanted to do this in a really... Sorry, go ahead. Good. So it's a great question. So the question was, when you're taking the picture top down, sometimes there'll be an overlap. The top leaves can cover the bottom leaves, and therefore you may get an error in your measurement. There are multiple ways of doing it. For example, let's take a corn plant. Corn plant grows tall, and the leaves are coming on both sides, phyllotaxy, and so there's a lot of overlap. The way people do that is they actually put a camera top down as well as on the side. And so they can get a good picture. But in this case, if you look at in general the plants grown in greenhouses, in controlled environment agriculture, these are usually short duration crops. They're about 3 to 4 weeks. And by the time the canopy is closed, that's about 3 to 4 weeks, what happens is if you can take images, you still get data, but the data is either under or over predicted basically because of that. But up to that canopy closure, it's a very perfect scenario. Now, the other thing is, in research, we are comparing item A to item B, and if the error is equally distributed, still the comparison is statistically valid. But I think that it's a very good question, and we are really looking into that aspect. The other thing that is also of importance is when you are trying to predict dry weight of the plants from image, it can be species specific. Some species have really thick leaves. You're only getting a top surface image. So these algorithms need to be developed on a species level. And so far we have developed some algorithms for lettuce crops like petunia and poinsettia. We are seeing that generally all varieties of lettuce, red leaf, green leaf lettuce, they all have sort of like a uniform, universal calibration. So it may be species specific. Within a species, you probably can have a very powerful algorithm. I'll explain that question when we get to this one. So that's what I was getting to. So here, I mentioned that we wanted to use this technology, research-based equipment, but then end of the day, this need to be translatable to some sort of like affordable technology that growers can use. So here is another software. It's actually free software. It's called Easy Leaf Area. It's been developed by a colleague of mine at UC Davis. I'm just giving this. There are plenty of software like this that can be automated. Here is a picture. So this analysis is being done on this. So it's about a meter square area here. And so we place the camera about 3 or 4 feet on top of this. Now, where do you want to place the camera? It's your choice. You want to collect more plants? You need to take it a little bit higher so you get a good wide angle, and then you can collect a lot of plants. But you can zoom into one plant if you're interested in it and take a picture too. So that is totally up to the operator. But here is the picture where we took these lettuce plants. They are grown hydroponically, and the software automatically, within a couple of minutes, you can actually pull all these images and do a batch processing. and you can get leaf area of individual trays. In this case, right there, the leaf area of this whole tray is about 658.99 centimeters square. So if you know the leaf area, you can look at the leaf area over time. Very simple camera. This has been captured using a $150 camera. As any regular camera, just placed on top of the plants, take a picture, and automatically process it. So there are applications available out there that one can use off the shelf. The apps that we are developing also can be used in the future for this, the same purpose. Some examples of how this image-based plant growth measurement can be used is actually shown in this graph. There are three treatments, and we measured the canopy area of the plants in these three treatments, which I'll explain in a minute, using imaging. So it's, all of this data is collected using imaging. And we have, in this hydroponics particular example system, we have some fresh solutions applied to plants every day. We have a sort of like a recycling system where the nutrients are being recycled, and we adjust the solution. And then we also have a situation where we were dumping the old solution and refilling with fresh solution on a weekly basis. And we wanted to see how the growth is differing among these three treatments, and we want to do it in a non-invasive way. And so we use this imaging system approach. And clearly the system is actually able to separate these three treatments. Over time, the fresh solution always, because it gets a lot of nutrients, fresh nutrients, so it's growing at a much faster rate compared to the conventional way we do in our greenhouses, which is continuous recycling solutions. But this is one example, the power of imaging can use to determine. So what we are now advocating our growers is use these small cameras and crop, start measuring how these plants are growing. And when you start seeing separation, then you can probably dump your solution and supply plants with fresh solution. In doing so, you can actually increase your productivity. So here is a tool where they can actually figure out the negative effects of recycling solution using imaging. We're also using this technology in vertical farms. I mentioned before, in these vertical farms, they're so tall, and it's very hard to look at how plants are growing at 20 feet level. And so we are placing these cameras, and these cameras are continuously capturing how plants are growing in each of these trays. And from that, we are actually able to figure out if there is an issue with plant growth in general. So there are nice applications here. Are there any questions so far on the plant growth analysis? After this, I want to move to the nitrogen analysis, but I can take one or two questions if there are any. The approach of... go ahead. Right. It's a good question. So all of this is nice, and where is the software for the growers? And so that's what we're doing at Purdue. We are making this software, and we want to keep this software public, free of cost. You can download it onto your computer, or you can download an app onto your smartphone, and you just need to have a camera and take pictures. And then you can just use the software to do the processing for you. So that's how it'll be going forward. So I have a grant actually that supports this research that we wanted to make this available to general audience, anybody who's interested to do this. So if you have an interest in this approach, keep in touch with me and I will be able to guide you to the right place where you can download this and play with your system, your research, or your production facility. Okay. All right. The next topic, so we looked at plant growth, showed you how you can measure non-invasively how the plants are growing. You can look at leaf area, or you can also look at, if you're interested in dry weight, dry matter accumulation plants. The other interesting thing that we get asked all the time is, we wanted to measure nitrogen in the plants. Nitrogen is most interesting. We got to pay for that if you send these samples to labs. So is there any way you can just use this imaging to measure the nitrogen status in plants? And so our work got, we started using simple spectral reflectance sensors to see if there is any signature, very distinct signature from plants when you grow them at different nitrogen levels. So here are the lettuce plants. They're grown at different nitrogen levels, starting from a low EC to high EC. These plants were grown separately, but for this picture's sake, I put them together. And so what we did is when we took spectral reflectance using a simple spectral radiometer from these plants, and that data is actually shown here. So what we are seeing is that actually we have collected data all the way from 350 nanometers to 800 nanometers, but the range that is most interesting to me is this red band. And you can see that there is a clear signature, as if plants are talking to us here, it's a clear signature from plants with the different nitrogen treatments. These individual reflectance show that when you have either really high or really low nitrogen, there is more reflectance. And at the real optimal levels, in other words, treatments like 2.5 or 2 decisiemens per meter, which we normally see, which are these middle ones, actually the reflectance is very less. Plants are absorbing most of the red light. So this kind of triggered us, okay, there is definitely some signature from the plants that's happening in this wave band. Why not deep digger and figure out exactly if we can relate that signature to actual nitrogen status in the plant? And so we use again the same imaging approach. I've described to you about this RGB image, the fluorescence method of creating the alpha channel, applying that as a mask. So far we talked about the process when I described the plant growth assessments. Then what happens is, I've also showed you that we have a red and near infrared images. Once we create the mask, we apply this mask on top of red and near infrared images, and then process those images to get these gray values. So I've showed you before these grayscale values. If you go closer to the zero, it means more is being absorbed. The numbers are going to be low. So low grayscale means more absorption. High grayscale, in this case of NIR, is more reflectance. So we calculate those grayscale values. The software does this automatically. All of this gives you a grayscale value. And we just develop this ratio, NIR, near infrared to red. There are so many popular ratios, remote sensing ratios for nitrogen estimation. For example, the SPAD meter, which we are all familiar with, actually uses a ratio, a similar ratio, but it does it, it's specific at 960 nanometers to 660 nanometers. We are using a different wave band here. And we calculate this ratio based off of the mean grayscale value. So the grayscale value for red is 36, for near infrared is 44, and the ratio becomes 1.23. Yeah. So again, keep in mind, you can use a median value too, and you'll still get the similar relationships. Mean, median is definitely, or you can pick up a particular band if that is interesting too. For example, if you go more closer to this side, it's much more sensitive because it's all red, absorption, a lot of absorption. So there's all possibilities. I just picked up a particular value here, and we're trying to see if that correlates with actual nitrogen status. And we've done this for poinsettia and petunias and lettuce. All of three show very good relationships. So here is the data. That ratio I just showed you, this printed out in the wrong way, it's NIR by R, which is just the ratio here. That ratio for plants going to different nitrogen treatments versus actual plant nitrogen status in percentage dry weight, this is measured from a laboratory. So basically we grow the plants, we take these images, and then we harvest the plants and send them to laboratory to get the nitrogen content. And we are seeing a very nice linear relationship. Of course, we wanted to make this much more powerful. We want to add many more varieties, and we want to develop a powerful algorithm that we can use for nitrogen estimation. Once the algorithm is developed, all we need to do is take that and convert into some sort of an iOS software for the iPhones or a simple Microsoft version for computers. And that can be downloaded. You take the pictures, and in the background, all this processing happens. The only thing is you have to come up with a way of that contrast, and that's what we are right now working on, using that near infrared light for the smartphones. So once you have that smartphone image, you can transfer it to your computer, you process it, and then you get the values. The last topic is about plant water status. So we talked about growth rate, then we talked about nitrogen, potential uses there. And then towards the end, I want to talk about how much irrigation needs and how do you determine using thermal imaging, when do you want to irrigate the plants. And the concept is very similar and most of you are probably familiar with. I just wanted to refresh this idea. Basically, transpiration's main role, the reason why plants transpire, is to just cool off their surfaces. 90 to 95% of the water that is taken by plants is lost in transpiration, and the remaining is used in the metabolism for maintaining the leaf turgor or in photosynthesis. But still, about majority of 95% of the water is lost through stomates just to cool off the surfaces. As the water starts to evaporate at the juncture of the stomate and the air, it picks up that heat, the latent heat process, and then gets evaporated. In doing so, it cools up the leaf surface. And so, when there is less water, the whole transpiration goes down. We know that the stomates starts closing, the transpiration goes down. When transpiration goes down, the leaf temperature increases because there is no evaporative cooling happening. It's just like the reason why we sweat, we perspire, is because we want to cool our body surface. The same thing is happening here at the stomates. The stomates lose water. In doing so, they cool the leaf surface. But when the stomates close, the cooling doesn't happen. The canopy temperature goes up. So if you measure temperature of the canopy, you kind of know how much water is there in the plant. If there is a drought stress, if the plants are really having relatively less amount of water, their canopy temperatures slightly go up. And that's what I'm going to show you in a minute. But that's the background behind using temperature of the whole canopy and estimating the water status of that canopy. And so we can use canopy temperature to measure transpiration. And canopy temperature, there are many ways. There are handheld infrared guns, but we wanted to really go beyond that and use imaging, because once we develop these cameras, I've shown you a camera, it's about $250. It actually has a thermal camera inside that. So the same camera can be used for crop growth measurements, for nitrogen measurements, and also looking at plant water status. So that's our goal, all three happening at one time. And here is a picture how this technology is, how powerful this is. So on the left, so it's the same picture. This is a regular visual image on the left side. These are microgreens grown in trays. And on the right side, a thermal image of that same trays. So we asked one of our undergraduate students to water these trays. Just hand watering, and then after he has watered, we let about 15-20 minutes, and then we took the thermal image. So in the thermal image, you're seeing different colors, right? And so those yellows and oranges are the spots where the canopy is warm. Go back to the concept I mentioned to you. If it is warm, it means that those spots have less water in the medium, so their stomates are kind of closed. Whereas those purple spots are where there's a lot of water. So when he was watering, hand watering, there are spots that he missed. And so this technology not only tells you how much water is needed, it's actually telling you how uniform is your irrigation. And this is very important. If you want to make profits in your greenhouse business, you should be selling a crop that is uniform. You don't want a crop that is up and down, so you'll never get money. So we are looking at temperature, and you can move this this is called spot meter, and you can see this spot is about 86 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas if you move it to those purple spots, you probably will see 70 degrees Fahrenheit. So you can see how nicely you can pick up the temperature of the plants, and the greenhouse temperature is maintained throughout this process, so the air temperature is not changing there. It's just the water that is there in the trays that's causing the differences in canopy temperature. We even tried this approach in a cold environment inside a growth chamber. We wanted to see how effective it is if the temperatures are really cold. Can you still pick up the signature? So here are a group of lettuce plants, and I took the image. I took a picture and looked at the canopy temperature, and I just stopped watering for next 24 hours, and then took another image, and there was already 4 degrees Fahrenheit difference in the temperature. And you can see there's more of in this area, there's more of yellows and again, you can move the spot meter and you can see the numbers, but on an average, we found these numbers represent the average for us. So that's another an example. In simple greenhouse operations, we always try to maintain greenhouse temperature, air temperatures, but what really matters to plant is the tissue temperature, the plant temperature, or the canopy temperature. Of course, there is a relationship between air temperature and the canopy temperature, but if you have a way to actually measure canopy temperature, that's much more powerful than just measuring the air temperature. So now we can measure the canopy temperature, not just your heating or cooling, based on the canopy temperature. In this case, the example, we have two situations, a no shade where there's a lot of radiant sunlight is falling on the plants, and then we have a shaded treatment right next to it, and then we expect that the shaded plant should be cooler compared to the non-shaded open group of plants, and that's exactly what we're seeing here. There's about 3 degrees difference, and so you can use this type of technologies, pick up the signature, see how much temperature is there. Now there is no water problem here, it's just a temperature problem here, so you can also adjust the greenhouse temperatures. So in a nutshell, this is possible, and we are actually developing software to pick up the grayscale values from even these thermal images and kind of give an average temperature for each picture, the way I described the nitrogen and growth. The same thing can be done even with these images. And so in one system, sort of like a $200, $300 camera that can be attached to a smartphone, we are trying to develop growth analysis, nitrogen analysis, and crop water status. So this is a very powerful tool, and that's where our research is heading. The Controlled Environment Agriculture Lab at Purdue University is highly devoted on that. That was the last slide. I think I went quite fast towards the end, but I can certainly answer any questions if there are. Go ahead, Alex. Yeah, this one or this one probably, right? No? This is Yeah, that's just swap. There's a typo there.
Which one is correct?
It's NIR over red. But don't take that ratio, because the NIR is a very broad. I'm not giving you the band right there, right? So it's about a 20 nanometers band. That's the in a multi-spec camera. When I say 620, it is anywhere between 600 to 640. So this is just a test run. Actually, I've got real good responses even at the blue range. So both blue and red will work because chlorophyll has peaks both areas. So we were able to actually pick up a very good signature. But that's the answer. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. You can find me at Purdue University Controlled Environment Ag Lab. And if there are any questions, shoot me an email. Or if you need any application, I'll be more than happy to collaborate and work with you.